In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I have a great chat with Colin Kinner. Colin is a startup ecosystem specialist, company director with over 20 years experience working with high growth technology-based companies, and a startup coach and trainer. So I knew he would be the right person to ask when we want to talk about the role of startups and small businesses in the future of work in our smart communities. Colin shares a bit about his background in startups in lots of different contexts and why it's important that Australia gets better at building an economy based on high value, knowledge intensive jobs rather than just on resources and agriculture. We discuss how smart companies contribute not only to smart communities, but also to economic prosperity, and examples from places like Singapore where investing in young people's knowledge to build smarter cities. Colin tells us about Startup On Ramp and what he has observed during the program about innovation in regional Australia and the relative immaturity of Australia's startup ecosystem. We talk about the myths and mindset challenges that stop people pursuing startup opportunities, as well as the absolute importance of validation when starting any venture. We finish our chat discussing the emerging trend of social entrepreneurship and why we need more than buzzword bingo in our understanding of emerging trends. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the Smart Community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play with smart communities. The future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Colin. How are you today?
Good, Zoe. Good to talk to you.
Yes, you too. It's been a long time since we've chatted.
Well, no, that's because we're all busy.
Oh, it's a bit insane. But anyway, let's jump straight into this. And can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
Sure. So my background is working with startups in lots of different contexts. So over the last 10 plus years, I've worked with startups as an investor, having run a couple of early stage venture capital funds, as a accelerator program manager. So I've run a number of accelerators that focus on high growth startups. And I've also done a lot of mentoring and teaching. So particularly in the last few years through Startup On Ramp, which is all about teaching startup founders basic skills. What am I passionate about? I'm seeing people build awesome businesses that go on to be wildly successful.
Awesome. And the reason I wanted to get you on the podcast is to kind of bring that different perspective of, the startup and entrepreneurial space, because as we know, as we move into this different kind of future and, well, it seems like maybe you can talk about this a little bit. It seems more and more people are going down that entrepreneurial path. Can you tell us what kind of sparked your interest in this startup space?
Sure. I first got involved in startups through the university sector. So working with researchers who had pointy technologies, so technologies that have been the basis of years of research and where they thought that this might be an interesting opportunity to build a company rather than just continue doing research. And actually in Australia, we have a pretty good track record in building technologies that can go on to be pretty valuable. So classic example is the CSIRO wireless technology, which has gone on to be the basis for more or less every wireless device that we use, whether it's a laptop or a phone or whatever. So I got excited about working with people who had technologies that could be the basis for companies. And that got me started in working with high growth companies. And it occurred to me that actually in Australia, we're not doing anywhere near enough of this. We can all think of a few examples, but that's what psychologists would refer to as an availability bias, right? Where you say, I can think of three examples of successful Australian technology companies, therefore we must do a lot of this. I actually did some work a few years ago with Startup Oz, which is the national advocacy body for startups in Australia. And we looked really deeply at how we're performing in Australia in terms of the which we're producing high growth technology companies, and compared that against other countries. And we also looked at, venture capital investment and angel investment and a whole bunch of other metrics. And the reality was that a few years back, Australia looked like a developing economy. It looked like a whole lot of countries that are really only just starting to get their economies into shape, in as much as we weren't doing much in the tech space. The numbers were really pretty appalling. That's improved a lot over the last few years, but I guess that kind of got me started thinking about how do we get better at building an economy in this country that is based on high-value, knowledge-intensive jobs rather than just resources and agriculture.
We're looking at Australia and we're built on resources. And then you look at somewhere like South Korea that's quite advancing quite quickly, and they have such a diverse range of export products or services. So how important do you think that is?
Oh, massively. So there's been some research done by MIT that has led to a thing called the Economic Complexity Index, which is basically an analysis of the economic outputs of a country and then use predictor prosperity as a nation. And what the research has shown that the more diverse the economic outputs of a country, the more successful that country will be economically in the medium and long term. And it stands to reason, right? So if you're really good at one thing, then all it takes is a downturn or some changes in the global economic landscape in relation to that one thing, whether it's resources or making computers or whatever it is, then you're really exposed. And in Australia, if you look at our economic complexity ranking, we're ranked 59th in the world out of 200 and something companies that are in this index. And so you mentioned South Korea, they're actually ranked 6th in the world. And it's because they're really good at creating a whole diverse range of high-value, knowledge-intensive industries, whether it's software or hardware or advanced vehicles or marine radar. They do all manner of stuff. And if you look at Australia's economic outputs, it's kind of massively dominated by resources. I think that's a real concern.
Mm-hmm. And I guess in the future of work and where we're going, how important do you think the startup space is to, when we're talking about smart cities? How do you think that startups and entrepreneurs can help cities make things smarter?
Yeah, look, I think they're really important because, a smart city, in my view, a big part of being a smart city is that you're building smart companies, smart industries. So there's always going to be a role for population servicing businesses, whether it's hairdressers or plumbers or whatever. But I think the economic prosperity of a city or a region anywhere in Australia or anywhere in the world really relies on building knowledge-intensive companies. And so I think a lot of cities are doing well. So, South Korea is probably a good example where there's been a national effort. I think Singapore is a really interesting place to look at. They've made some really big commitments around city-based smart industry development. So a really good example is the Singapore government's National Overseas Colleges program, where for several years now they've taken several hundred uni students in the National University of Singapore and given them a 6 to 12 month internship in Silicon Valley. And more recently, they've added in other cities like Beijing and Stockholm and London and Tel Aviv, where they've said, we're only going to become a smart city if we get our young people exposed to startup hotspots around like Silicon Valley and Tel Aviv. And they've now got several thousand alumni of that program who have experienced those startup hotspots. And then as a quid pro quo for the government supporting them in doing that, they have to give at least a year back to Singapore to share their learnings, share their networks. And what's happening is it's actually had a very big impact in spawning a wave of entrepreneurship and a whole bunch of people saying, actually, that's part of the role I want to play in my city.
Mm. And what are your thoughts on regional Australia as well? And how, one, is the startup ecosystem or space or whatever you want to call it out there, well, out here, here I am in Toowoomba, different? And are there different supporting mechanisms that are required so we can really enhance the space and support and nurture, small business and startups?
Yeah, look, it's obviously a very different landscape if you're comparing regional Australia with Singapore or Silicon Valley. It's not a meaningful comparison. But a big part of what Startup OnRamp does is provide training and mentoring programs to startup hubs across regional Australia. And it's been really interesting to see the diversity of some of the regions in terms of how much they're doing around innovation and entrepreneurship and how ready they are to help people build technology companies. We've seen some regions where Coffs Harbour is probably a good example. They have made a pretty big commitment as a city and as a region that they want to foster the development of tech companies, high growth companies that will be global from day one rather than domestic or locally focused. So they're making pretty good inroads in building an ecosystem to support these kinds of companies. I've also seen a bunch of other regions where this is totally new to them. You know, the idea that people would build global companies from where they are in their region is totally foreign. So I think we've actually got a pretty big task as a nation to help some of those regions to get started. And some of it is even just understanding that there are other kinds of companies they could be building that are global from day one.
Mm. And have you seen a shift in the entrepreneurial space? You know, are there more entrepreneurs, less entrepreneurs, more focused on different sectors, or like what are the trends and things that you're seeing in this space?
Yeah, look, I think there's definitely a strong upward trend in terms of interest in startups and entrepreneurship. I think people realize that selling their time is kind of a mug's game. I mean, I think it's maybe an unkind way of expressing it, but I think people are realizing that there's only 24 hours in a day and you can only sell a certain number of them, whether it's as an employee or a contractor or a consultant or whatever. And for people to get ahead, they really need to be thinking about how they can build an asset, something that they can monetize that is not directly connected to how many hours they're prepared to work. So I think that's a realization people are having, but it's slow. You know, if we were in Silicon Valley and someone was thinking of what kind of business they can start, they'd ask their friends, and 3 out of 4 of their friends would have done tech startups. But we're not in Silicon Valley, and you know, in some regional areas, this is a pretty new concept.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And I've been thinking about in the future of, you know, how we're working. And do you think, and I mean, maybe this is an obvious answer, but do you think we'll see more and more people having their own startups and things while, you know, maybe they have a contract on the side, and like how that will actually shift and change if you are a traditional employer, I think is going to be huge. But do you have any thoughts or insights into that space?
Yeah, and look, I think it's actually one of the big myths that I think stops a lot of people from pursuing startup opportunities. There's this kind of mindset that says, oh, I couldn't possibly do that because I got a job. So, you know, I'll stay in my job. And the idea of quitting that to go and become an entrepreneur is pretty scary, understandably, for a lot of people, that they don't want to, you know, give up that source of income. But I think the reality is that for almost all startups, you can do a whole lot while you are still employed and do it as a, you know, side hustle or something that you work on in your spare time. Again, there's a lot of things that people get caught up on. One of them being people spend way too much time and money building a product, particularly if it's like a software product or some kind of online offering. I recently chatted to someone who had spent upwards of $200,000 of their own money building a software tool based on their own belief that this would be a really good idea, but without really validating that idea at all with customers. And so I think, you know, there's a bunch of myths that firstly stop people from doing it because they think, oh, I couldn't because it's, you know, I've got to stay in my job. And then secondly, that cause them to fail because they, you know, they do things that, like spending $200,000 that are actually not going to be helpful to them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's a key thing in the startup space, actually not just keeping it behind closed doors and, you know, you and your best mate know about it and think it's the most awesome thing ever, but actually going, who's going to open up their wallet and pay me for this thing?
That's it. If nobody pays you for it, it's not a business.
Yeah. If the answer is no one or I don't know, then you need to find out. And also, yeah, it's might be the best thing in the world, but if you can't, no one's going to pay you for it, or, you know, you have some kind of income coming in, then it's not useful, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. You know, I see a lot of people that have totally misunderstood the process. And I think, you know, again, it's an immaturity thing where in the ecosystem, in most parts of Australia, it's pretty immature and around a lot of people that folks can go and ask for advice. So I think generally they've misunderstood how to go about building these kinds of companies. And, you know, I sort of feel some sense of responsibility in a funny way that, you know, if people are going to put their entire life savings into something, and there's a pretty high likelihood that it's going to be money totally wasted and they'll, you know, they won't have a second shot at it, I sort of feel like someone has to help them and intervene and say, well, actually, there's a You know, there are other ways you can test that idea, like going and talking to customers before you go and spend every last dollar you've got.
And there are so many tools available now that you can trial and test your product as well, like without having to build the entire, you know, back end.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're big advocates of using some of the really simple tools like the Lean Canvas and the Validation Board, which are, you know, kind of like a very mini business plan, if you like, you know, business plan on one page, if we're talking about the Lean Canvas. And it's a really good starting point, you know, before people go on. And I've even encountered people that have written like a 100-page business plan for their new startup idea, which is not a good use of time either. So I think, you know, there are some really simple tools out there that once people get using them, they help them get from an idea to something that they can have some confidence is actually validated.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked a little bit about startups helping cities be smarter and that type of thing. So maybe this question might be useful to head into, which is how do you think we can better integrate, you know, across different disciplines, startups, single solo entrepreneurs, small business, governments, and industry?
Yeah, look, I think the idea of integrating all of those things is valid and really sensible, but I think there is actually a danger of doing it too early. So what I mean by that is you often see co-working spaces and startup hubs and other initiatives which are intended to bring together entrepreneurs and corporates and government and local businesses and whatever. And I think for the most part, that doesn't work. I'd love to think that it did and that it was a great way of cross-pollinating and getting ideas shared. But the reality is, if I'm an entrepreneur and I'm building a global tech company, one that, you know, while I might start in whether it's Toowoomba or Cairns or Gippsland, doesn't matter. But if I'm going for a global opportunity, the likelihood of a really good customer happening to also be located in the same region as me and maybe even in the same co-working space is extraordinarily low. You know, if I'm a travel startup and I want to onboard, you know, large organizations that have travel budgets north of $5 million a year, am I going to find them in my regional startup hub? Probably not. So, you know, I'm a big advocate of collaboration and of different types of businesses working together. But I actually think that's one area that a lot of efforts have been a little bit misguided in this kind of maybe slightly naive thought that if you bring different types of businesses together, they'll automatically collaborate.
Yeah, though it's interesting and something I've been thinking about, particularly in regional Australia, that you must have a hub or you must have a space that if you don't have a co-working space or whatever, that you'll never be able to collaborate or whatever. So I do think it's interesting. And I also think sometimes it can be a distraction as well. And like you said, if you're building a global business, and it'd be great if that person was right next to you, but chances of that happening are low. And actually, they might not be your best customer, but you might work with them because they're right there.
Exactly. I mean, even from a service provider point of view, you know, I think I've seen a bunch of startups that are, you know, whether they're in a co-working space or some other program, and there's a law firm, you know, that shares the same space, and they go, oh great, there's a law firm here, I'll use them because, you know, they're right next to me. If you're doing startup, the needs that you have in terms of legal advice and structuring are so different to most other kinds of businesses that probably the law firm that happens to be there is not the right law firm for you, and that probably applies to accounting and probably also applies to, you know, graphic design and digital marketing. So the, you know, the needs of startups are just that bit different.
That is interesting as well, because I think also like those connections online and, you know, going to those networking events that might not be in your region, might be able to connect through Zoom or whatever, or you might go to another region for a certain period of time or whatever, really seeking out those specialty people that you need. Because yeah, I do think people fall into a trap of only looking at who they're looking at, which can be a
problem. Yeah, and I think people also don't know what they don't know. So, you know, if I'm a first-time startup founder and I don't know about, let's pick a topic, vesting of founder shares as an example. So that's a, you know, pretty commonly used approach by startups that allows for changes in the founding team early on, because that happens a lot, tends to not be relevant to most other kinds of businesses. But if I've never encountered it before, I won't know to ask the question. So, you know, I think this is one of the important roles of education in startup ecosystems, is to give people visibility that there's even a, you know, a topic that they should explore. So that's, you know, in a way, that's what we're trying to achieve with Startup OnRamp, to be able to say, well, here are a bunch of topics that we don't have any intention of making you an expert on, but we're at least going to give you enough visibility that when it comes to it, you'll be able to say, ah, I remember there was something that I needed to work out before we get our shareholders agreement done.
Yeah, and I think in this space, there's a lot of, I guess, you know, people have a really great idea. I mean, I'm guilty of it myself, but that business background, you know, isn't there. It doesn't need to be there necessarily, but you need to know what questions you need to ask. I'm keen to hear your thoughts, but like, you know, some of these startups will fail, not because their idea isn't awesome and it could have been amazing, but just because of the lack of business acumen or kind of not getting the right advice or pulling the right people in.
Sure. No, definitely. And I think, you know, by a long way, the biggest reason that startups fail is that they build a product that nobody wants or not enough people want for it to be, you know, a viable business. So I think really we want to make sure that they do legal structuring well and that they get good advice on a whole bunch of other things. But, you know, I sort of feel like if we use the Pareto principle and say, where do we get the 80-20 impact? It's probably on the basic question of how to test whether your idea is any good before you spend all your money.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I feel like this is an emerging trend. We're moving to more like social entrepreneurs and having profit purpose businesses and that type of thing. Are you seeing that in the space you're working in?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a trend. And there's a lot of people that seem to have an interest, which I think is, you know, for the most part, it's fantastic because I think people are recognizing that they actually have to contribute to the community that they live in, you know, whether it's through building a social enterprise or just being involved in doing something positive. So I think, you know, you can't criticize that. I think if there is a downside, it's probably that most people who start social enterprises or profit for purpose type businesses where they, you know, they have a social or an impact agenda that's kind of driving them, most of those people don't have the resources to actually make it happen. And so I think, you know, I find that a bit frustrating when you see people trying to build businesses that will have a positive impact on society in whatever way, but really they're not much more than a small charity. You know, if you look at the Gates Foundation as a framework for this, they use a group called 3IE to assess a lot of the funding applications that they receive. And 3IE uses this methodology that basically says, can you demonstrate that this project or this business or whatever it is that we might consider supporting can positively impact millions of people in a repeatable and scalable way? So they're kind of the same concepts that you would expect an investor to be looking at when they're considering investing in a startup. So it's kind of the same rationale, I think, has to apply, that there's not a whole lot of point in setting up a social enterprise where you're going to be everything you do, you need to have your hand out looking for somebody to donate some money so that you can go and do the thing. And then you do it, and then you put your hand back out again and say, well, we need more money to do the thing again. I think some of the most impactful social enterprises have learned a lot from for-profit startups as far as kind of scalability and repeatability goes.
So what is the difference between a startup and a small business? I meant to ask you before.
Oh, I'm glad you asked that. That's one of the really important things, particularly for regions. So a startup is a small business when it starts, because, you know, when you start, every business is a small business when it starts. The difference is that startups can become really big businesses, and the ones that do it well can become big really rapidly. So we all know successful tech companies. I mean, you just need to look at on the front screen of your smartphone and look at some of the icons and think, okay, what have I got on my phone? I'll look at it now. So I've got Twitter, I've got Apple, I've got Strava, I've got Voxer, I've got PayPal, Dropbox, LinkedIn, and you know, the list goes on. And those are all companies that are worth, if not billions, you know, tens of billions of dollars. That's kind of where we should be aiming, I think. Did that answer your question?
I think so. I mean, for me, listening to In Startup OnRamp was like the, you know, we start off as a small business, but yes, the potential to grow without increasing your costs so much. So that kind of upward tick, but your costs, because you're, I guess, selling the same thing, or, you know, the service is automated in fashion or scalable because it's not a one-for-one relationship.
Yeah, I think scalability is an important theme. and you know, businesses become scalable when they leverage the internet to be able to deliver whatever their product or their service is. The other attribute that's probably worth mentioning for startups is that they tend to be investable businesses. Whether they need to raise money from investors is another question. And a lot of them, if they're smart, they can just grow by using customers as their source of funding. But a really interesting way to look at it is to say, well, is this a business that an arm's length sophisticated investor could take a look at and say, you know what, this is something that I see as sufficiently high growth potential that I'd put my money in it. And investors know that startups are risky. So for them to compensate for that risk, they have to see a lot of growth potential. And so that's an interesting way to kind of say, well, is this a startup or is this some other kind of business?
Mm-hmm. And I guess like it's just making that distinction and then working out where you want to go, because there's nothing necessarily wrong with having a small business, right?
No, absolutely. And I think most people who want to start businesses are best suited to starting small businesses. So I'm certainly not an advocate of everyone in every city saying, oh, well, that's it. I'm going to go start a global technology company, because they're pretty hard and they're not the sort of thing that everyone can or should do. So I think that's actually one of the interesting questions for any individual is to say, well, how do I know what kind of entrepreneur I should be?
Mm. And how do you think that cities and regions and kind of, I guess, local government or other agencies that are working in this kind of smart city space, how important is it to engage or work with startups? I know you said before, like sometimes it could be too early and that type of thing. So is there any thoughts in that area?
In terms of how cities can engage with startups?
Yeah, and like support the startup space and that type of thing.
Yeah. Look, I view it as straight down the line economic development. So, most cities anywhere would agree that a part of their role is to foster business growth and do economic development. So, classic economic development is to say, well, what are the market failures in areas that we think are important for our city or our region? And if they're market failures that are not going to go away, then there's an argument that the government should step in to address them and either take the market failure away or put in something that helps people to bridge it. So a classic example of a market failure is lack of seed funding. So in Australia, we have arguably a pretty decent amount of venture capital. We have a growing amount of angel investment, which tends to be the step before venture capital, but we have almost zero seed capital. So seed being at the stage when someone says, I really have a good opportunity, but I haven't really launched a product and I haven't got any revenues yet. Very few investors would put money into that. And so I think that's a classic area where you'd say there's an argument for cities to intervene and help entrepreneurs to bridge that gap.
What do you think the emerging trends are that people aren't talking about enough in this space? I guess you would be talking about them all the time.
Yeah, look, I don't actually know that there are. I mean, everyone knows what the emerging trends are around kind of, blockchain and machine learning. And I think actually that there's not a whole lot of sense in saying, well, here's a trend and so everyone should jump on a bandwagon. I've been to a whole lot of startup pitch events where, it seems like every startup that pitches says, well, hey, we've got artificial intelligence. And, it's almost like buzzword bingo where, we've got AI and ML and VR and AR and drones and
blockchain.
Blockchain. Yeah, that's it. So, yeah, bingo. So those things are obviously important and they are real trends. There's a heap of emerging opportunities in all of those areas. But I think I've seen cities and mayors, if I can say this, mayors are actually probably guilty of this more than others. I've met a bunch of mayors who've been to like CES or some other major kind of tech conference, and they come back saying, our city is going to be a leader in machine learning. And it's great that they've got the enthusiasm, but it's a little bit misguided in as much as every city in the world wants to be a leader in machine learning. Right? So why is your city going to be a leader? And they can't answer it. So, I think in terms of technology trends, I think it's important to have an eye to, what's coming up and what are the big waves that we need to be getting onto. But I think there's also a danger of getting too caught up on hype and buzzwords instead of just saying, let's build businesses. It doesn't really matter what kind of businesses they are.
Yeah, no, awesome. Love that. Well, Colin, it's been so great to chat with you. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Always good to chat, Zoe.
Yeah, we do need to catch up for coffee in real life at some point as well.
Sounds like a plan. You're on.
Excellent. I just have one last question, which is how can people connect with you?
Sure. Website is startuponramp.com. We always have a lot of information there about programs that we're running all around the country. On Twitter at Colin Kinner. We're also on Facebook and Instagram, et cetera, and LinkedIn. And always looking to talk to other regions that are, you know, at that point of deciding that they want to build their startup communities, because I think it's something we're mission-driven. I think it's something that we really want to get behind.
Yeah, awesome. And I realize I haven't even asked you about Startup OnRamp. Can you just give us a 101 before we wrap up?
Sure. So Startup OnRamp is a series of training and mentoring programs for early stage startup founders. It was started in Brisbane 3 years ago. I started it based on a realization that we actually have lots of people who could be really good startup founders, but who just don't start companies, often because they don't know what to do, they don't have the skills. And particularly in regional areas, we don't have a network of people that we can go talk to and say, hey, how do I do this? So we built the program over the last couple of years to being national. We're strongly supported in Queensland by the Queensland government through Advance Queensland. So that's helped us to roll the program out to about a dozen regional startup hubs. And we're also doing that nationally by bringing startup hubs together so we can train them to deliver the program. So I'm a strong believer that we need to be helping different regional startup hubs to develop their own capabilities and skill sets. So we work with them to get them in a position to deliver the program to emerging entrepreneurs in their regions.
That's awesome. Thank you for that. And yeah, it's been excellent to chat with you. I should mention that it was great. I did Startup OnRamp myself in, when was that? July?
Yeah, it would have been July.
You know, we did the the two-day intensive program. And it was really great because although I have a startup or a small business, but anyway, I have some kind of thing that I do, which I love, but just learning all the other things behind that with the investing and the vetting and...
Oh, vesting.
Vesting. There you go. Vesting and those type of things, just getting thinking about those. And then obviously bringing in other startups, successful or emerging startups and that type of thing to hear from them and learn, really learn from their journey, not just the stuff, you know, you see on social media, but actually being able to dive a bit deeper. So yeah, it was really, really useful. And yeah, thank you so much for putting it on and letting me be a part of it.
Oh, I'm glad you did. And in fact, it's really good to hear that's your observation, because that's exactly what we're trying to do, is to say, well, look, let's bring in other entrepreneurs that can share their experiences and not the glossy, haven't we been so successful? You know, we've raised hundreds of billions of dollars and everyone should just be amazed. It's more saying, well, what are the things that, you know, very specific things that we did that were helpful or not helpful? And you can learn from that.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much, Colin. And we'll say goodbye for real. I think we've said goodbye 3 times now. And it's been great to chat with you. And yeah, I look forward to that coffee when I see you, when we happen to be in the same place at the same time.
Yeah, sounds like a deal.
Cool.
Thanks, Zoe.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community or find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter @smartcompod. That's com with 2 M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears, so thank you in advance. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.